An emperor. That's not my business. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful. But we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. And all will be lost. Do not despair, the hate of men will pass, and dictators die. Dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite! Let us fight for a new world, to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world, to fulfill that promise. Let us all unite!
Welcome back, folks. Oh, actually, we're just starting, aren't we? Hey, you're in the Corporation Nation. funny. It is the 22nd of April, 2015, Wednesday, which means Daniel is joining us. Daniel, we missed last week, but welcome back, my friend.
Yeah, it was a little bit of strange to have a Wednesday we weren't talking, but
a free Wednesday.
Did a little research, and I know you were out having some fun.
Yeah, well, fun is one word for it. Yes, we were talking about my little trip to Philadelphia. It was very interesting. But, I left off the show, Daniel, yesterday with a concept that I wanted to talk to you about. I find it to be a very, 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 very important notion. And what that was this notion of Jehovah, which is defined in the 1928 Webster's Dictionary of the English language, and it refers to Jehovah as the noun or the name, the scriptural name of the supreme being. But and that's the basic definition. So it's very general. And then it says, it explains. It says, if as is supposed, this name is from the Hebrew substantive verb. The word denotes the permanent being as the primary sense of the substantive verb in all languages, which is to be fixed, to stand, to remain, or abide. This is a name peculiarly appropriate to the eternal spirit, the unchangeable God, who describes himself thus, I am that I am, in Exodus 3:14. And I was breaking down the different forms of God. Of course, Webster describes God in two ways. One, as the supreme being in Jehovah, the eternal and infinite spirit, the creator and the sovereign of the universe. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth, from John 4:24. And then it describes God as what we all worship, sometimes unknowingly, and we even still feel that we're worshiping God, even though we're not, because we're in the state. He says God as a noun is a false god, a heathen deity, an idol. Fear not the gods of the Amorites in Judges. A prince, a ruler, a magistrate or judge, an angel. Thou shalt not revile the gods nor curse the ruler of thy people. Well, I curse Obama, I curse the queen, and I curse the pope. Any person or thing exalted too much in estimation or deified and honored as a chief or the chief good. Now, yes, Daniel, we have this sort of devolution of the word God, and of course there is certainly the heavenly barrier there to distinguish between what is God and what is man acting as God. But I found this to be a very, very spiritually heart-wrenching definition of Jehovah. God is Jehovah, the supreme being, but more importantly, the permanent being, all that is nature, all that is the universe, the water, the air, the ground, everything, all at once, all that was, all that is, all that shall be, and especially all that is at this very moment. That is something that just cannot be put into terms, into an art form, into an artifice. It cannot be. And nor should it be, or does it need to be proven. It is self-evident. There is no fiction without the life to create the fiction. And so it's this concept of not needing to be proven. I am that I am. I need not show you any other evidence of my existence other than to open your eyes. I am that I am. That is a powerful, powerful notion that I kind of want to get into today.
That's a deep one. So I'll let you begin wherever you want to go on that.
Well,
there's been a lot of disputes on why did the King James Bible use that versus, say, Yahweh? And certainly the letters that are formed in there, I tend to think there's code going on in the Bible, so when the translators at times are using certain things, there's more of a code going on why they're using that letter formation, and there could be something far beyond what meets the eye to the average reader. And I feel that there's codes in the letters, and so in the alphabet there's a reason probably why they were using that, even though there's certain letters in the Old English, like J is I from the past, so, you know, we kind of changed that up. So, but there is something in there. So if you saw the J, then the first letter in there really was an I. So it would be I-E, and then H-O-V-A-H. So it's there's a codification what the letters mean to tell you why those letters are in that sequence, and then we enunciated, of course, Jehovah. But there's been debates on Jehovah versus Yahweh, so that's why I said that's a deep subject, and I'm not too sure where I want to begin on that, because I don't think they have Yahweh in the Noah Webster.
Well, yeah, and what's important to me is the concept that this concept, this very essence of all that is, quote-unquote, the verb of being, must be created into a name, into a noun. It must be personified, anthropomorphized into a humanistic form so that man can claim to be sort of the replacement, the anti-God on earth. That's where it really strikes me that this is the spiritual notion of what God is above all else, and everything under it, all other concepts of man to describe, define, and like I said, anthropomorphize or personify God are all failures. They're all falsities. And that really, again, it struck me as a deeply spiritual way to whether it's an interpretation or whether it's the actual intent, it's the one that actually makes the most reasonable, logical, natural sense to me. And that's why I said it had such a profound effect on me, because I'd never heard it said that way before. Permanent.
Well, it's interesting that in the sense of an understanding of a creator and then the creation, and us coming from an all powerful spirit energy force that has put life into, you know, being. And interestingly, that I am, that's one of the first things we say when we're identifying who we are, where we're from, yeah. Say I am so-and-so. So it is interesting that we even use that in our English vocabulary as a way to actually, you know, tell someone who we are. And we're actually saying we're from the source when we do that, because I am so-and-so is just like saying you're of God. You're from the source that created you. You're from that eternal source that's not the false gods or these make-believe gods and titles that man has created.
Well, and it's, you know, at the second that you alter that statement, I am, you're actually desecrating that holy sort of concept. You're actually desecrating the notion that you are a creation of God, and you're saying I am something of fiction. I am a creation of something else. I am not of Jehovah at this moment. I am a person. I am a title. I am this. I am that. I am a name. I am everything but what I should be, is how I interpret that notion.
Yeah, especially when we end up with, again, those debtor titles in our names that we've unfortunately been scarred and imprinted into using without even thinking, you know, what that is. So, yeah, definitely it leads into a bad energy especially when we use that first beginning of those words, I am, and then lead into a bad title that man's using to control someone for their own, you know, basically purposes of
usury. Yeah, well, so I wanted to, Yeah, exactly. And as we know, that's that's against the law. I wanted to also, you know, this notion that I left off the show yesterday with the concept of what everybody just praises and just absolutely adores in this country is the notion of freedom of speech and freedom of the press and freedom of religion and freedom of this and freedom of that. And here we have, you know, two terms, freedom and religion, for instance, that are so, so different than what people actually believe they mean. Now, freedom of religion is defined by Blaxforth. It says it embraces the concept of freedom to believe and freedom to act. So we have something that is in the mind, and then we have the body, which takes what's in the mind and acts upon it. Okay, so the freedom to believe and the freedom to act. The first of which is absolute. I can believe in my mind what I want because we haven't evolved to the point where there's thought police yet. They can't read our minds and tell us we're thinking bad thoughts yet. So they can't control our belief. But what they can control is our action, the first of which is absolute. Well, that's belief. The second of which is act, or to act, the actions, remain subject to regulation for protection of society. Now, how do you protect the society, Daniel, from one that would actually do no harm to any man or to nature? How do you protect a society from that concept? How do you protect a truly spiritual man of God, a truly spiritual man of Christ that respects all life, respects every man, no matter if they're his enemy or not? How do you protect against that? And that's so ironic to me that the government needs to protect. It needs to feed those type of people to the lions. It needs to literally dissuade men from acting upon their conscience, their religious quote-unquote freedom. It must prevent such horrific thoughts as do no harm, as do not take upon yourself all of the things the Bible tells you not to take upon yourself. Because, of course, the legal realm cannot exist unless you take its mark. That's the ultimate truth, and so it must protect itself. Society must be protected from those who refuse to accept it as their reality. That seems to be the problem with this notion of freedom of religion, because, of course, freedom, as we've discussed, the dominion over the state of being free is of the state. That's why you put D-O-M on any word. Kingdom. Wisdom. If your knowledge is controlled by the state through education, then all you can have is the state-offered wisdom. Right? So if you have freedom under the state, you're only allowed to do what the state allows you to do. You cannot act upon your belief. You must act upon its laws and belief. And that's a really disturbing concept, and I wish people would get that through their heads, that they cannot in any way, shape, or form be a man of God, live in the natural law, and be respectful of man and nature if they are enjoying and utilizing the freedom of religion that the state offers. Does that sound about right to you?
100%. And what's happening here is what people do not realize, that with their state name that is not really theirs, that they're using under title, again back to the surname, man's person title, that has been deemed to be upon us for use, but only under license, that duty that comes with that, which is tax, is kind of interestingly explained. I'm reading out of the Society of Upper Canada Law Lectures, 1963. And under freedom of worship does not modify the duty, or really the tax, of a citizen under a state name. It says, it is sometimes suggested that the normal duties of a citizen are in some fashion modified by what is wrongly considered to be a paramount right, the freedom of worship. Rand Day in Somerkase said that freedom of religion is an original freedom which is anterior and positive to law. In Ontario, freedom of worship is also guaranteed by statute. Religious freedom, however, embraces a conception of freedom to believe and a freedom to act. Freedom to believe is an absolute freedom. Freedom to act is not.
It's painful. You consider that.
They just told you that if you're in their society with their tag name and your moral conscience comes in to say something is wrong, but the collective that you're caught up in blind doom with, says that you do something wrong or immoral, going against nature itself, you're in the wrong, and you're not free to act against that. So if you say, no, I will not harm my fellow man, and they say, yes, you must harm your fellow man, then the collective basically wins, and you're told to go against your moral conscience. So even refusing to do something that is morally wrong is made to be legally right in their world.
And that's the whole foundation of legal law, and that's why I keep stressing the fact that the legal law stands in opposition to the natural law, to God, to God's law, to nature, to everything that is good. That is what legal law is. And I really, really want to hit that home, because there is no purpose for this positive law except to destroy the negative law, which is what we're talking about, this notion of doing no harm and never being injured or brought into law because of something you've done. And if you do something, then you take care of it. You're responsible for your actions. Therefore, there is no need for a positive law. In other words, one that is enforced through military dictatorship. There's no need for that if people are responsible to each other. Now, people take it, that notion of the natural law, and try to exclude God from the picture, the divine being, the Jehovah. But that's an impossibility. It's actually a requirement, as stated in the definitions, even by the legal language of the natural law. It's impossible to ignore. And one of the disturbing things I had heard around the way when I was at this conference over the weekend was people coming up, and we were having discussions about the natural law, which is being basically put forward as something that is godless. It's very strange now that I understand this whole thing, but people were actually truly believing that things like the law of relativity and the law of gravity and the law of this and the law of that, that these things were part of the natural law. A great and utter fallacy when it comes to the understanding of the spiritual notion of what natural law is. Now, of course, the law of gravity is not a law, it's a theory. It changes wherever you go on Earth. The gravity maps are really quite interesting, in fact. Gravity changes all the time. In fact, we could probably be having a change in gravity if we have a shift in the Earth. Gravity is not a quote-unquote law. As do no harm is a quote-unquote law of nature. You see, the law of nature could exist in every form of gravity, or even without gravity. Gravity is certainly not part of the law of nature. And this was very disturbing for me to hear people come up and be that inundated and that scientifically dictated in their thoughts that they can't be spiritual in their nature. It was very disturbing for me.
Well, reality, when it you know, is right in front of us, we actually experience it. And when we're talking to people, because when you are speaking truth and someone's not ready for it, unfortunately, you become extremely concerned for them and sympathetic to an extent on why are they not understanding what you're saying. And boy, that's when the patience has to kick in.
because either they're going to just walk blindly and continue not to hear you, or they're hopefully at one time their ears will get unstopped.
Yeah, well, you try. I do this every day just for that purpose. I was curious. You said that there's a difference between the freedom of worship and the freedom of religion. I found that to be interesting, so I just looked up the word worship in Black's First. The act of offering honor and adoration to the divine being, both of those words being capitalized, so it's referring to, of course, God, Jehovah, religious exercises participated in by a number of persons assembled for that purpose. The disturbance of which is a statutory offense in many states. In the English law, a title of honor or dignity used in addresses to certain magistrates and other persons of rank or office. And that's a disturbing statement, isn't it? We worship the gods that are the magistrates that are the judges. But this notion that worship is you can collect in a number of persons within a house for that purpose, but if your purpose is to teach people to get out of this system that is against the worship of God, well then, or the religious freedom that we're talking about, well then you're actually acting in conspiracy against that so-called freedom that's afforded in a franchise called citizenship. So it's a really bizarre dichotomy of thought when it comes to the difference between worship, which again is honoring, but not necessarily acting in the laws of the divine being, only offering honor and adoration to the divine being. Well, if you get a pope up there and he pretends to be God, well, then you're worshiping, again, the magistrates. What did it say again? A title of honor or dignity used in addresses to certain magistrates and other persons of rank or office? I mean, that's a really disturbing statement. And, of course, Daniel, as you know, that's why we used to call judges God. It was not a, we called the King of England. He was God. We had our freedom and our liberty and our state of being. Free men was because of King, the God that was King. This was an openly known thing, whereas today we have no idea that when we're walking into a court we are addressing a God, do we?
No, and people even, at times I'd get into discussions with people who said that they weren't religious and they don't believe in God, and I'd say, well, why are you going to the court? I said, because more than not, you're going to be dealing with the justice of the peace. The justice of peace is referred to as your worship, so how more godlike could that be?
I know. It's interesting because you say the word, again, you start tearing apart these terms, justice of the peace. Well, that implies that the peace only exists because of the in other words, that the peace needs to be somehow managed by man, when really isn't God supposed to be, isn't this the nature of everything in a state of peace? So when we're talking about the magistrates as the justices of the peace, well, what the hell does that mean? I mean, it's like an assumption that there is not peace. And I guess that's true, isn't it? Because we walk around in the nom de guerre, the war name, don't we? We're in a state of constant war. And they've even redefined the word peace, from the biblical notion of peace to war. The notion that peace is war. War is peace. It's actually a very true statement when you start defining terms of the art of government and of war. It's a true statement. It's just that peace just means that there's actually a cessation of the actual violence of war, whereas the notion of being under a military occupation or dictatorship still certainly remains.
Yeah, it's nothing nothing too surprising when you realize that there's even at times Latin writings behind some of these magistrates, that we were told that God is not a respecter of persons, and mainly in the commentaries, if you go to older commentaries that talk about that very scripture, it's actually talking about magistrate. So their terms behind them would say justice is mine, right behind them, sitting up on that throne. So they are, in a manner, believing they're doing their role as a false god, looking after all the false god title holders who think they're gods but don't know it, and therefore they're really just under license and subjection under the use of their false god title name or surname. So it's a terrible system that when you look at the ignorance, unfortunately, that goes on all day long. And that's why I generally don't talk too much about anymore about the idea of having a hankering or a want to go into those bad buildings, which I believe have energy of evil.
Yeah, it's it was highly disturbing. I'm so glad that I was there with multiple people, just as the commiseration, as a support group, because we all felt the same exact thing. It was a very disturbing notion. And again, I must say, Daniel, that I've heard this said before, but I've never perhaps wanted to see it. And that is simply that the evil, everything that is the antithesis, the adversary to man, to God, to life, it's all hanging out there, man. It's in every center city. It's in every city, literally. It is, you know, some of my friends from the East Coast, you know, I grew up in California. I had no idea what masonry was. Perhaps I'd heard about it. But my friends on the East Coast and, you know, some of them that grew up in Ohio, they're like, you know, everybody's a Mason that has any salt, that has any status in society. You don't get ahead unless you're in masonry. You must be a Freemason to have any ability to do anything. And here in Utah, we have the same system. It's just that they call it Mormonism. But it's, you know, their symbols are the symbols of masonry. It just is masonry. The symbols on their sports shirts, when they played football, was the compass and the square. I mean, it can't get any more obvious what Mormonism is. And when you look at the government here, it's the same exact model of masonry, where you must be quote-unquote Mormon, i.e. Mason, in a screwed up sense, to be anybody in government, anybody of any importance, to be allowed to have the keys to the local municipal kingdom, that kind of thing. And you know, this notion that somehow the United States has a constitution, despite the fact that all other constitutions in history were created by masonry in their book of constitutions, listed right on, you know, the fact that people actually think that the United States is not the United States of masonry, that's not what created this particular constitution, is now that I see, it is laughable to me. It is, and like I said, the symbology and everything that I saw there in Philadelphia, now knowing what Philadelphia actually means, very, very evil, very disturbing. Anyway, we'll be back. Stay tuned, folks.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Your money. What is it worth today? A $100 bill in 1913 is worth only $2 today. So now, your money is just about worthless, and the Fed will continue printing more and more of it. But what if you could turn it around, $1 at a time, and make your money worth more than it is now? How? By acquiring gold before your paper money is totally worthless. But how can you afford gold at today's prices? By buying it 1 gram at a time. And this is so important because gold is the future. For as little as $65, you can begin trading your almost worthless currency for something real, something you can hold. Carat bars, which keep their value, can be stored securely, and are easily accessible, just like a savings account, but a savings account backed by your gold. Carat Bars International, a savings account you can count on. For more information, please click on the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. Again, that's the Carat Bars banner ad at republicbroadcasting.org. And start saving now.
Now there's an amazing new natural antibiotic every person must have.
It's Cells Alive Silver Solution, and it destroys over 650 hard-to-kill viruses, fungus, bacteria, and much more. Cells Alive Silver Solution has no expiration date, is great for emergency kits and storage shelters, and comes in 8 or 16-ounce bottles. Order today at 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Hempusa.org, 100% chemical-free superfoods and unique health products.
There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you'll never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Hey now, hey now, don't dream it's over. Hey now, when the world comes.
All right, folks, what's back? You're in the Corporation Nation. Hey, I wanted to read this, Daniel. This is I just happened to be, you know, it's funny. You go through pages and pages and pages in these legal dictionaries, and I just happened to come on the word license. It's actually pretty funny. Now, what I didn't know is that, as according to Black's Fourth, anyway, under license, we have a little section called constitutional law and law of contracts. Now, listen up, folks, because the word license refers to the Constitution. The Constitution is a license. A contract is also, you know, a license in contract. So, what is constitutional law and law of contracts when it comes to the word license? Well, what is it? Constitutional law and law of contracts is a permission by a competent authority to do some act which without such authorization would be illegal or would be a trespass or a tort. Well, okay, so we say that the Constitution gives us quote-unquote freedom, but what it's really doing is offering a permissive state of being to act against and trespass and tort other people, do things which would otherwise be illegal. But more importantly, the legal law makes things like charity and you know, free medical care and other types of charitable acts, makes those illegal without a permission. And it's very important. A permit or privilege to do what otherwise would be unlawful. Also, the written evidence of permission. The Constitution, folks, is written evidence of permission. A permit granted by the sovereign, which is the people, generally for a consideration to a person, firm, or corporation to pursue some occupation or to carry on some business, subject to regulation under the police power. That's what constitutional law is. A license is not a contract between the state and the licensee, but is a mere personal permit. Neither is it property or a property right. It's not your property. Your rights aren't your property. Nor does it create a vested right. You have no rights but what are given to you in your state of personhood, in other words. It's kind of disturbing when you start really breaking this down, isn't it, Daniel, that the notion that people just walk around and take these actual opinions, quote-unquote, of the legal gods of what constitutional law is as merely a license and permissive notion that makes everything illegal without permission. It's kind of disturbing to continuously hear people promote this thing as if it is of God, or as it is, you know, it's just, I'm becoming more and more sensitive to that notion that people have no idea what they are under.
Well, they can't comprehend it in the moment because they're so caught up in the illusion. So they can't see it, and they don't even realize what we're even talking about when we've discussed so much about what's in a name. So they're walking around not realizing you don't need a license to be yourself, but you do need a license to impersonate the name and the title of someone that you're not, and therefore there's where the permission comes in. We're basically in a really bad movie when we wake up in it and see this, and then we realize everybody else around us doesn't realize that they're acting in that movie and they're not in reality. So everything that we see out there, everything that man does, the whole legal system is all about non-reality. It's about make-believe, because they force you to believe. And that's how they use make-believe.
To license means to confer right or power which does not exist without it. imagine if the Constitution is truly just a license. Well, then these guys literally licensed themselves, conferred themselves a right and a power which does not exist without that Constitution to basically enslave peoples from all around the world who come here for the American dream, right? That to license means to confer a right or power which does not exist without the license. Well, if the Constitution is just a license, wow, that's pretty deep.
Again, you said it right there. They said the people want to come to, you know, to the United States or to for the American dream, because it's a dream. It's not real.
Yeah,
they're not in reality. The whole thing is just a fiction.
Yeah, and Daniel, what's probably most disturbing to me is that we have now gotten to the point where we've given so much power to these entities. You know, kings over kingdoms were one thing, but when you've got the quote-unquote military-industrial complex that has been set up, the notion that you know, you've got these nuclear bombs pointed at every country, which makes basically war obsolete in the capacity that was in the old days. We're now in fourth or fifth generation warfare, which is silent weapons for quiet wars, which is frequency manipulation, which is cancer, which is all these different diseases they're spreading. We've given these guys so much power now that it's almost unthinkable to even contemplate going against it. And as we've been talking about, it seems to me that the only option that is left to us, because we cannot organize, we are organized into this hell that we call government. So we're never going to be able to organize. We're never going to be given the true tools to organize. The internet certainly is not making that happen, and I don't believe ever will. But, you know, as we've been talking about, the intention of my purpose for doing what I'm doing, being on the radio, writing, doing this book, has changed from being one of the sort of false notion of waking everybody up to selectively saying, look, those who have ears, let them hear, and those who have eyes, let them see. Everyone else is not going, it's not going to happen, man. And so my intent has changed dramatically in the writing of this book, especially to the notion that this is only for a very, very few people out there who truly want to have all this information at their fingertips, who have the intent of dropping out of society, not trying to change society and revolve it back into some spiritual place that's just going to get corrupted again. I mean, I've realized now, Daniel, especially after talking to you and getting so much wonderful, you know, comprehension from you, that this is a spiritual battle, and there is no spirit in society. Society is basically a cattle herd that gets, you know, troughed from one end to the other of the white fenced grass area. That when we say it's a spiritual battle, that's individual. It can be nothing else but an individual battle. And so I'm only doing this now for individuals. And that's a very different approach, a different concept from what when I first started with groups like We Are Change, trying to, you know, change everybody at the same time, the Alex Jones shock jock model. It's controlled opposition, in my opinion. This is a battle of the individual man against a much greater and evil machine. And so, like I said, the intent, I think, has really changed for me. I don't know if that's a true statement with regards to the way you feel about this, but the fact that you come on here every week, you know, tells me that you do have an intent.
Yeah, I went through that same feeling at times, because when you're out with a truth to share with people, and so few may be responding, because we sometimes don't know who's, you know, listening. Sometimes there's some silent, you know, people who do listen to the show, and they may not voice any opinions, you know, in the call-in period, but they are listening and they are taking notes. And I do get people that email me, and they know who they are, because they have got it, and they're definitely knowing that it's an individual choice. It's not something in a collective. You will never get the collective on one page, because there's so much confusion out there. But individually, people who listen and take a seed of truth into their heart, they know what's right, and then they start to go down that journey. But it is an individual thing. It's not a collective action that will do this.
No, I don't think there's any proof, there's any showing whatsoever that is even a possibility, both in the Bible and in law, in the notion of what law is. I don't see any hope at all for the mass of individuals out there.
Yeah, there's no pattern even in that book that says that the majority will wake up. It's actually a minority and a few, and it says broad and spacious is the road down the destructive path, and many are finding that, but few are the ones on the narrow road that has actually life. So the majority are just not going to wake up to truth.
And that's a harsh reality. It's a harsh thing to say, and people might even think that this is elitist or some ridiculous notion like that. But in fact, unfortunately, it's a very spiritual realization that there are things in effect right now that have so altered man's capacity to learn, to feel, to experience the things that we're talking about, whether it be vaccines or things in the air or things in the water or things in the food or just things in general, sigils, signs, symbols, it's a sadness, a great sadness to me that to know that, to know what the Bible truly says, that like you say, that the path is narrow, that the wealthy man cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven because he will never separate himself from that false wealth. And of course, wealth can only be obtained upon the backs of others. The abundance of God, the gift of God, can only be taken and abused and hoarded so that some men are wealthy and most are in abject poverty. And even that state of poverty, I don't think, is enough to make people give up on the American dream or whatever dream it is that Mammon is providing at the moment.
Hey, what's interesting, too, when we talk about the relief of poverty, they have many, many charities that try to relieve poverty, but in a sense, the relief of poverty put someone into a tax bracket where they're going to be penalized. So actually, the impoverished are more protected because they don't have the ailments of a wealth society that's out there chasing all the people running around with the wealth who believe it's theirs, but they're always trying to hide it. And they wouldn't be hiding it if it was truly theirs. So they're all looking over their shoulder. You'll never find a content, wealthy man.
Well, let's face it. I mean, you know, you can look at this two ways, Daniel, and you know, tell me what your personal perception is. But you know, I long ago stopped looking at churches, organized corporate churches, as entities that are there to actually get rid of poverty, but more like doctors have been fooled into relieving the symptoms of disease but never treating the disease itself, because it's profitable to have a bunch of impoverished people. It's profitable to keep people in poverty, just as it is to keep people in a state of dis-ease. So, in my opinion, the church is not there to prevent poverty or to do anything about it, other than to manage it, to be the entity created by the state, a necessity for the state to even exist, its duality, its so-called moral functionality, that the church is only there to ensure that the poverty is managed and continues. It is not there to solve the problem. Am I off when I say that?
No, you're completely right. They would be out of business. It's like you couldn't run in their world a relief in the spirituality, especially because they're there supposed to be for spirituality, especially the Christian registered religions. They're supposed to be bringing people to salvation in what they're doing, but technically the church or the state version of spirituality, the legal version, needs participating sinners. So they need a collective of sinners. You can't run a church without sinners because they don't release sin,
yeah.
And they can't. So they just basically collect on it.
Well, and this,
they have to have a collection of sinners to be in the collective, to be supplying them
in the collection plate.
Their regular, you know, artificial currency of blood to keep their artificial body corporate for that religion going.
Absolutely. It's and this is not, you know, let's be clear. We're talking about the institution that is the church, the corporation, the higher powers and authorities that is the church. We're not referring to the good people who are sucked in to the church to do the charitable work that they feel is a necessity to help people in the limited capacity that the church actually allows them to conduct that charity. And of course, they can only do so with license. So this is not a diss or a insult to the people that are attending church, although it is certainly fair to say that they are attending something that is not spiritual, but actually designed to take spirituality away, because again, it's designed to promote the belief but prevent the action, right? It's designed to limit the actions of man in their charity and in their conducting their own life with regards to the law of God. That's what the church is there for. It's a necessity of the state. It's hurtful to say such things. And again, it's the people are supposed to be the church, not some building, not some corporation. That's all I'll say. We'll be back, folks. See you.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology, all while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. escapeharassment.com.
Come to Finca Baiano, a small community in Panama, which is being established for people who believe that a future crisis may be difficult to survive in North America after a collapse of the system. Go to bugoutpanama.com for more information. There is limited space for 100 people only. Go to bugoutpanama.com to immigrate as long as you can. Prepare. Don't despair at bugoutpanama.com.
And the men who hold high places must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart. Closer to the heart.
All righty, folks, welcome back. You're in the Corporation Nation. We're talking with Daniel today. Hey, we got a quick call here. Peter Neese is on the phone. Welcome, Peter.
Hi, Clint. Listen, I wanted to add something to your ability to contract, because I've told John Saddlemeyer this several times. You've got to bring in the system that we live in today, which is a territorial private international law system out of the District of Columbia, you've got to bring in the Uniform Commercial Code. And in your contracts, when you write them, you better make sure that you use 1105 and you deny its application to your contract. Because if you don't, then it's automatically presumed, if you take that contract into any one of the courts, that the court will automatically take jurisdiction over it, because it's a territorial application of the Uniform Commercial Code. Just thought I'd let you know this, buddy, because nobody tells anybody anything anymore.
Well, I'll take that as an insult.
No, well, I'm talking about when you're contracting. See, everybody goes out and thinks they can write a contract or whatever, and there's no problems. When that guy takes that contract into court, if there's not an exclusion on that like that, the court can automatically take jurisdiction of it.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, this is the thing we've been trying to get across, especially when Daniel's on, is that the problem is not that there is some, you know, little tiny remedy here and there. There's something that you can put on the contract to make it protected. The problem is that you're writing a contract in government property. You're writing a contract in the person of government. So no matter what you do, honestly, and perhaps you'll disagree with this, no matter what you do, if you're acting in the person of government, if you're acting in that corporate status that is founded, created by government, then you don't really have many ways to... In fact, I would say there is no remedy that is a true remedy, as we call Christ the Redeemer, for instance. There is no remedy within this system of law. I mean, you can quote all these different Uniform Commercial Codes, but ultimately when you look at that...
Quint, what I say, I've usually done. I've proven it. Okay, I've made contracts this way, and the court said, gee, we don't have jurisdiction. So what I'm trying to tell you, ever since the 1930s, when everything went into a trust, basically, like the president, people look and say, gee, we elected a president. Okay, that's fine. Did you elect a president in the office of the District of Columbia? Or did you elect a president in the office of the United States of America, Republic? Well, if you don't look at it and don't understand it, all of the offices since 1930 have been converted basically over to the District of Columbia. So they're corporate offices.
Sure.
So all of these guys that come on are these Republicans and these Democrats and everything. And the reason I know this is that I've emailed these people and I say, before I give you a contribution, please tell me what jurisdiction you're in. Your office that you're running in, what jurisdiction is it? Not one of them got back to me and said what jurisdiction their office is in.
Well, makes sense.
I'm just trying to give your people a way to go after these people and you know, make them understand and say, hey, you're not going to get my vote unless you're running under the United States of America.
All right, well, I'll tell you what, hold the line if you like. We'll get back. This was just a quick segment. But stay tuned, folks. We'll be back.